Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 91.
This week on the podcast, the North Pole gets lost and can now be found wandering aimlessly through Wisconsin.
And John Boehner pats himself on the back for successfully carrying out the least productive year in congressional history.
We offer a brief review of just how right we were in 2013.
And the Christmas Eve spin machine goes into overdrive.
This week on Hillary Pillory, the Clinton super PACs are already competing to run her campaign into the ground before it starts.
And family-hating Virginia resident Liz Cheney pulls out of the Wyoming Senate primary against well-liked ice cream socialite Mike Enzi.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the internet, as always, at www.braintrustlive.com.
Yes.
And anywhere else, because we're just everywhere. We're on all right. The places.
Yeah. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
We've been gone for a while.
Oh, my God. Hopefully, we've never been gone this long.
I know. It's crazy. Yeah. Almost 2 years coming up.
And we've almost 2 years. We've never taken a 2 to 3 week break like yeah, we did.
I know.
There were numerous reasons.
There were. Mainly because we were in different cities.
We were in different cities. I got a death illness that you will still hear me suffering from.
Yeah, you'll hear it any time that she laughs. So I've made it a point to try and make that happen as much as possible.
It's going to start a coughing fit of some
right,
sort.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Going to be a disaster.
But this is a thing that you suffer from, though.
Yeah,
CDS.
We named it a long time ago.
A long time ago. It's chronic death syndrome. Lila just sort of, you know.
I have it.
Yeah,
it permanently.
It's a thing. It's a sinus thing. It's a chest thing.
Whatever
it's an allergy
I have
thing. It's a
is
thing.
CDS.
Yeah. Your whole family has it.
My whole family has it now. Yeah. Normally, I'm the only sufferer of CDS, but...
Right. Well, I have a feeling a lot of people in the country are having it right now because it's freaking cold.
The weather's crazy right now. Well, and it's... To put this in larger context, the day that I arrived in New York for the holidays, it was 70 degrees in New York.
Yeah.
It was warmer in New York City
than it was
in
LA here.
That day.
I know.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
So I arrive in New York. The weather's... a balmy 70 degrees. Mm-hmm. We're all walking around in t-shirts or whatever.
Right. I was freezing here.
Right.
I was wearing fuzzy socks and hoodies and coats and earmuffs.
Like you do.
Remember when I wear the crazy hat like
got
the
a
week
crazy,
before?
Like, it's like a hat that like a cartoon hunter might wear.
Yeah, it sort of has
like
those,
a duck hunter
like those
in
earmuff
it.
Flaps, sort
yeah.
of. I was wearing that around
like
Los Angeles.
Like a redneck duck hunter. But that was all for a 4 degree difference, by the way, because at 70 degrees, everyone in New York was like, well... It's shorts weather. I mean, what are you going to do? You know?
Yeah.
And I immediately fell back into that. The next day, it went into the 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just sort of like...
devolved quickly.
Yeah, devolved quickly. We got colds. We got flus. We got all sorts of CDS-related illnesses.
Uh-huh.
And now, thank God I left when I did, because it is even colder now.
Oh, my gosh. It's cold everywhere.
It's cold everywhere. It's like... fatally cold in the Midwest right now.
Yeah, it's
not in the negative 20s, and the wind chill makes it into like the negative 40s or something crazy.
They were like canceling, like school is canceled. They're like telling you to like not go outside. Basically, I've been seeing a lot of Iowa Facebook posts.
Oh, I bet.
Recently, because people don't have power too, because it's so windy and everything. And it's like,
right.
It's bad.
The apocalypse.
It's really bad.
Well, apparently, on top of there having been this huge snowstorm that swept all the way across the country and prevented anyone from traveling anywhere.
Except you, mysteriously.
Except me, who mysteriously got here. I was like,
as if nothing
in the
happened.
Middle of like this chaotic airport where like no one's flights are leaving.
You just hopped on a flight and flew straight to Los Angeles.
Flew straight, yeah.
Yeah.
Right on time. In any case, we have what is called the polar vortex.
It sounds
touching
terrible.
Touching down. Sounds really dangerous.
It's bad.
It's basically like these these winds from the North Pole. That sometimes just sort of like blow off course.
Just like, get confused.
They get lost.
Yeah.
They're on a walkabout.
Right.
So they're currently on a walkabout in the Midwest. And we're just waiting for them to leave.
Okay, that's all you can do.
That's all
just
you
gotta
can do.
Just got to wait them out.
Yeah. It's cold. I mean, it's cold in the Midwest. It's very cold in the East. It's also getting cold in the South. Like places like Oklahoma and Texas are seeing really low temperatures.
Yeah. Of course, this is proof that global warming doesn't exist.
Yes, of course, because you know that in global warming, it only gets hotter.
Correct. Meanwhile, all of the country, you know, Americans think that the world and the universe revolves around them. It's like 1,000 degrees in Australia right now, where it's their summer, of course. And it's like 120-something degrees.
That's too hot.
It's far too hot. But it's like, this is, for all of the people who sort of like think that this disproves anything, it sort of like only goes to prove it more, right. Because we're just having more extreme weather, which is what climate scientists have always said is going to happen.
The weather is becoming
unstable. We probably
unstable.
Mistakenly were calling it global warming, but even still, when you look at sort of, you know, yearly trends, we're still in global warming. I mean, right. just because it's cold for like 3 days in Chicago doesn't mean that we're not having climate change any longer.
No, the Earth is getting warmer over time.
Correct.
It's causing crazy weather to break out left, right, and center.
And that's what we're having. Yeah. It's causing the North Pole weather to come to the Midwest to mysteriously.
Get lost like, on the way to the other part of the North Pole.
No.
It just usually swirls around the North Pole.
Yeah.
It's like,
well, maybe the North Pole weather is confused as to where to go because it doesn't know who the North Pole actually belongs to.
That's true.
Remember that? Did we actually talk about that on the podcast?
We did talk about that on the podcast, right?
Yeah. We did.
Canada wants it.
Yeah.
Well, so they thought they would head that way. They were like, well, if we're all in the North Pole together.
Yeah.
We might as well. I wondered if it had to do with the war on Christmas.
Oh, it might have.
Yeah. Because with that few people believing in the powers of Jesus Christ and Santa Claus, you never know what North Pole weather is liable to do.
Yeah, could have done that.
Yeah. So we're being punished either way by something, either by science or by Christmas. In any case, this has left people with a lot of free time to ponder the last year in political history.
Yeah.
It's not one of the great years.
It was far, far from one of the great years. In fact, it was very close to one of the worst years.
Yeah, it was.
So close that, I mean, it was.
It was.
It was that. In terms of the Congress. CDS.
CDS.
Sorry.
Just, if I have a I'm just breaking into coughing fits.
Yeah, you're just going to have to get past it.
There's nothing
everybody.
I can do. Yeah.
That's it.
This is one of the least productive legislative sessions in history.
Right.
For Congress.
Yeah.
They have this thing called a closed rule where basically they can prevent you from making any amendments to a bill that comes up.
Yeah.
So when they when they propose a bill that's absolute crazy pants, you can't make an amendment that makes it less crazy pants. It's a way for the GOP at this point, whoever's in power,
right.
But at this point it's the GOP, to kind of like close editing of bills before they hit the floor.
But they set all sorts of record with the amounts of those that they did this year.
In the last year, passed 44 closed rules, which is a huge number.
Yeah.
That's the highest record number for any year. But they also set records in shorter terms.
Smaller increments.
Yeah, in smaller increments. They adopted 19 closed rules during the shutdown, which was the most in a single week.
Right, and if you think about 19 in a week...
That was 19 laws that they had to consider in a week.
And 44 in a year. And 19 of them, that's, you know, over...
44 already the record.
Almost a half of them
in
1 week, and 44 is the record.
44 would be like once a week.
They were really busy that week.
That week, they went for it. They also, 11 of those, though, were on October 4th. So 11 were in a single day. So that was a record for the most in a single day. And then, obviously, they set a record for the number of closed rules on appropriations bills.
Well, that's not
that's
surprising.
What they're up to.
Yeah.
So they approved 20 closed rules appropriations bills in the last year, which is more than...
Yeah.
Ever really happens. The Democrats are sort of like doing some PR around this now because that's what you do in this circumstance. They've got this minority views paper out to tell everyone about it. And they're going to be doing like a big push on the, you know, for the 2014 elections because they want to take the House back.
Right. And they want to remind everybody how ineffective the the Republican House has been.
Well, and they made a video too where they have Boehner like talking about how it's going to be such an open process at the beginning of the year, and then how it devolved into them not even letting people, you know, propose changes to bills anymore.
Right. Yeah.
Because we have to remember, this isn't a Congress where the majority party is the only party that can even bring a bill to the floor.
Correct. Yes.
So they're saying...
And they have to have the majority of their own party to bring it to the floor.
The Republicans need a majority of their own party. They're the only party that can bring a bill to the floor. And then on top of that, they close out any chance for compromise by... basically making it impossible for anyone to make amendments to the bill. So that's why this is problematic.
It's a great way to govern.
It's a great way to govern, yes. So that's made them the least effective Congress possibly in history.
Yeah. Congratulations. I mean, John Boehner has said that that's been his plan all along.
No, and he's done a great job at not passing anything.
He really has.
Yeah, he's set a standard, if you will. We would like... As we were looking back in this year, we mostly just like to pat ourselves on the back for being right about things.
Yeah, it's what we do.
And we were right about a lot of things this year.
Indeed.
Namely, how no progress on immigration reform was made.
None. And we called that...
Months ago.
Before the Senate actually passed it, because the Senate passed it, and then it went nowhere fast in the House. And that was... A lot of people were sort of like, you know, in their yearly lookbacks, was treating that as a big...
A shock.
A big story. And... No. False.
No.
We knew.
We knew.
We were knowers.
It was never a story.
No. They're not going to do it this year either, because they have to, the House is the only people who has to run, or has to vote on it, because the Senate has already passed it. And the House isn't going to pass it. They're going to vote, the Republican House is going to vote on immigration bill the year that they're running in a midterm election.
No.
Doubtful. Sorry. People.
Definitely.
Not happening. Maybe before the next presidential election, but certainly not this year.
We could maybe see this in 2015 if some crazy shit went down.
You might get a border security bill this year.
Yeah. Oh, I bet you'll get multiple. They love a multiple. They love to introduce a bill again.
Right, exactly.
When it fails.
Yeah.
Also, Obamacare didn't seem to end the world, which is a nice non-surprise.
People tried to pretend like it was going to, and again, you and I, at the time, were like, well, if they get this stupid website fixed, then this is going to be a non-issue, because and the problem is that people can't sign up for the damn thing, and now they can, and now they're almost meeting their goals of how many people they want to have on it already.
Yeah, because there was, like, a last-minute rush, like we said there would be, and...
Right,
like,
and there will be another one in March before people will have to pay a tax penalty.
Yeah, they had a million people logged on by 5 p.m. on the deadline. They had to extend it
Christmas
an extra
Eve,
day
yeah.
mm-hmm. because they ran out of server space, or I don't know what...
who knows?
Internet things.
I was gonna, yeah, exactly, because internet.
Because of the internet, yeah. And also the phones were backed up.
Sure.
You know, they have... And this was all for the federal exchange. States, I assume, made their own... crazy, you know, changes to things. But they had to create a 24-hour grace period because people were getting knocked off the knocked off of the site. I learned a crazy thing over the break.
Tell
well, because I was in Washington.
Yeah.
And I was talking to some friends of mine that work on the Hill, and they were talking about signing up for the exchanges themselves because, as you know, congressional workers were forced to go on to the DC exchange. I had not realized until last week that we were not providing fully subsidized healthcare to them before.
It's insane.
This was actually cheaper for them, not because it's super cheap for them, in my opinion, as someone who gets employer-provided healthcare that is free, but because they were already paying...
They were paying for their own healthcare anyway.
For their own healthcare anyway. They were paying over $100 a month for their healthcare.
That's nuts.
We don't pay our congressional staffers huge salaries, P.S., people.
No, they are not.
There are a few things Fox News would like you to believe. One is that we're giving them lots of free benefits. Turns out, no. I was hoping that that was true.
Right.
Second is that we're paying them huge sums of money, which we're not. We're barely... Nobody on the Hill is, like, really making ends meet. It's, like, a bunch of 20-somethings who make $30,000 a year, like, wandering around. I also found out something crazy, which is that in Congress, this is not true in the Senate, but in the congressional staffers, they only get paid once a month.
What?
They get paid on the last day of the month.
That's weird.
So, apparently, like, at the beginning of the month, everyone's, like, living, living the high life. And by the end of the month, like, everyone is, like, scraping by on ramen noodles because it's a bunch of 20-somethings who just graduated who are making $30,000 a year and only getting paid once a month.
Right.
That's crazy.
That is crazy.
A lot of craziness is going on there.
Yeah.
But in any case, my friends who work on the Hill were sort of, like, not surprised by, you know, the fact that they were paying for healthcare. They thought it was, like, a fairly standard thing. And I was, like, horrified.
I know.
I was like, Jesus Christ, like, if in private industry, I'm somehow able to get fully subsidized healthcare. And I'm always complaining about my healthcare.
I know.
Like, God, if you work on the Hill, like...
That's nuts.
They should be giving you extra healthcare.
Yeah.
I mean, God.
Nuts.
Anyway, I was angry about that. But also, another person who signed up for the DC exchange was the president.
Yeah.
Who was just mocking us because
I know.
He already has healthcare.
I'll have two plans.
Yeah. Like, I'll have two plans and I make so much money that I'll just pay for one and not care about it.
Yeah.
Like.
If you got a subsidy, I'm going to be pissed. He did.
He did not.
He does not.
But he only signed up for a bronze plan, so he doesn't need one.
Right.
Because he was able to sign up. Not ever having to worry that the bronze plan wouldn't be adequate to meet his needs, because the bronze plans are pretty crappy.
They're pretty crappy. They're all like HMOs that have like a really high deductible, basically.
And and you're like, your total out-of-pocket costs for those are
high.
Like tens of thousands of dollars. It's like a huge amount of money.
It's not what you want.
No. Like, it's nice that they have all these built-in protections that plans didn't used to have.
Right.
And like, great, like you're no longer allowed to have like lifetime
caps.
Caps
yeah.
and things like that. But like... Right. I mean, if you can't afford to use your health insurance anyway,
if you can only afford a bronze plan, then you probably can't afford like the yearly out-of-pocket
costs
either.
Exactly. Definitely
so
not.
You're still going to be able to go bankrupt on healthcare.
Exactly. So rest assured. because now, as Michael Moore pointed out, we tweeted this for you, but as Michael Moore pointed out, Now we can move on to talking about why Obamacare sucks. Now that it's happened,
I know.
Brent and I can stop chirping about how great it is.
Well, we hated talking about how much we liked it. It was paining us.
It's like us having to explain to you why a Heritage Foundation idea was a good idea.
It's terrible.
That's terrible. So now we can focus on why it's not adequate.
Yeah.
It's better. It's just not adequate.
Right.
And Vermont is about to show us why.
They are.
We hope, unless the insurance industry gets in there and ruins everything.
You know, you and I have often talked about how we feel like this was going to be a non-issue. And I think that it's, as sort of the year sort of rolls along, I think it's going to become even more of a non-issue. Yeah. And also, as more people have health insurance on these exchanges, that while granted some of them may be paying more, I think that this is just going to like further go away. I think if the Republicans are banking on winning the 2014 midterms, running against Obamacare with no clear plan to put in its place, I think that's a loser for them.
Especially because the White House is, and I think the Democrats as a whole, are about to make a huge income inequality push. And that is going to be the defining issue of 2014, for sure.
It absolutely is.
Today, when you're listening to this, is going to be meeting with a bunch of unemployed people at the White House.
Yep.
They're planning this as the first in a series of events surrounding the issue of the unemployment extension not passing, and just general income inequality issues, because they know that that's a winner for them in 2014.
Yeah.
There are plenty of other candidates that are also banking on that, that are running in local elections or bigger federal elections.
Well, and I was talking to my friend who used to live in New York, but moved back home to Ohio, and he works in like the business office for the Kasich administration in Ohio. And he's a Democrat, but he sort of has been trying to, you know, he wants to keep his job, basically. And he sort of like can't understand why the Republicans in his office look at him like he has two heads when he says, you have to get out in front on this minimum wage thing and income inequality thing. Because at least in terms of minimum wage, you're seeing Democrats all over the place run on this. You're seeing states pass this. And it's sort of like, you know, the majority of Republicans think the minimum wage should be raised. The large majority of independents think it should be raised. And it's going to be a campaign issue. The Democratic candidate who's leading in Iowa, I was just reading a story in the local papers about like how he's talking about how the minimum wage should be raised to $10. That is what things are going to be about. And people are not going to be caring in November about the fact that the November previous that the Obamacare website didn't work.
No, especially because by November of next year, they're all going to be thinking about how awesome insurance. It is that they have health insurance.
Exactly.
And I think, you know, part of what the Republicans' sort of lack of strategy about this is going to sort of lead to at some point is going to be a massive shift in just sort of like how they have to define their own platform.
Exactly.
Because if they're not in favor of, you know, helping unemployed people back on their feet and stuff like that, like, I know that a lot of their people were voting for them based on these lifestyle issues and these sides, you know, distraction issues that really have nothing to do with anything. But if the opposition party is only talking about income inequality, it's something that every person sort of has a personal connection to.
And what
are they going to fill that part of their platform with?
Yeah, you can't go around the country running on a platform
hating unemployed people.
Right, hating unemployed people, not raising the minimum wage, not giving people who there aren't jobs for, you know, assistant. Like you want to basically, they're running right now on, you know, not allowing people to eat.
Yeah, exactly.
That's their platform right now.
If they're going to continue with this push, because they're, you know, they're still out there, like, talking about financial responsibility and saying that if we want to extend the unemployment benefits, it has to be paid for, and like all of these things that are things that, like, in a non sort of like, if unemployed people weren't in any sort of financial emergency and were just sort of like random people who have no sort of no urgency to their need for money, then maybe that would be a fine thing to say. But I think that their supporters like that they are sort of like trying to do this like paid for thing, because I think it sounds responsible because it, you know, personal budget, it makes sense. Bush didn't do it that way. No other Republican has done it that way.
No.
And I don't think that they're going to be able to make the argument that this isn't urgent enough to overcome that.
Yeah.
And they need something in their platform that appeals to people who would otherwise be easily swayed by this argument. And they don't have it right now.
Because some of the people who need long-term unemployment insurance have to be Republicans.
Exactly. Yeah, you would just think.
Based on science and math.
Based on math and science, which is one of the things Brent and I don't excel at, no. but are competent.
I'm guessing.
Brent here. And I can really get the tip done in a restaurant bill, and that's the only math that you really need.
That's right.
To know.
Yeah.
I just don't really see where they can go.
It's a loser.
With this.
Yeah, I agree.
And they're so dumb because the White House is already in front of it. They're letting the Democrats take it.
I know.
And this is the kind of issue they're normally good at kind of like buying back. Like, I don't know. I don't know what to say about them because I have CDS and I can't, right. I can't know at the moment.
Yeah.
But I'm curious where they're going to go with this.
Yeah, I don't know.
With this hatred of unemployed people. It can't be somewhere good.
I know. Well, it's never worked. You know, there's not the, if there were the jobs for the people who were just sort of like lazing around collecting the unemployment insurance, then like, that's one thing. But like the problem is.
We're so far into this economic crisis though. Well, and the average person has not really felt the impacts of the improvement.
The impacts
have all been felt on the sort of like grand corporate level. And so we already like have internalized that we're in a crisis.
Right.
We've basically at this point internalized that unemployed people are victims of this situation, that they're not just lazily lying around.
Yeah.
And to just sort of like stubbornly cling to some belief that like we can't extend benefits because of the cost without, I mean, the Obama administration has been very open about the fact that they think that this will be an economic boon.
Right.
That they, you need to extend unemployment benefits
these
because
people
that's
need
how
to,
you get the economy rolling.
Yeah, exactly. These people need to be able to buy things. They need to be able to eat. They need to be able to keep paying for housing. They need to.
Exactly.
It's
like you just start a new crisis if you don't. Anyway, I could talk about this all day.
Yeah, well.
I don't even know what I'm saying anymore, but I could talk about it for sure. In other things that happened in the last week.
Yeah.
Bill de Blasio was inaugurated, and now we have a new mayor of New York City, and he's better than the last one.
Right.
He hasn't done anything yet.
Sure that he is.
I feel better about it, though. I just personally feel better.
Yeah.
I was talking about this a lot while I was there, and I was sort of like, you know, even if he literally just, like, sleeps for the next 4 years, I will feel good about the fact that, like, New Yorkers who actually feel invested in the city, like, took the reins back at some point.
Yeah.
Because what we've been seeing is sort of, like, a corporate leader gone wild over the city, you know, and he's created this playground for the rich, and that's nice for the rich. It's nice that they get to have such a nice playground. But like, there was a point at which regular New Yorkers were like, okay, it's nice to have the High Line, but also like, I can't afford to live here anymore. And there's, you know, I'm being priced out by people who don't actually want to invest in the city.
Yeah.
And so I felt like it was a big moment for it. It felt like a big moment. Everyone went to his inauguration.
Yeah, it was a big deal.
Who were both suffering from CDS, like sucked it up and like walked down to City Hall so that they could stand across the street with a bunch of Occupy protesters. Basically, that was who was. I was like, why were you standing with the Occupy protesters? They were like, I don't know. That's who was standing there. And watch the inauguration. The creepy part is that Clinton was.
I mean,
swearing him in. Like, don't be doing that.
No,
I know that he used to work for the Clintons and that he has a relationship with the Clintons.
Right.
That's not who I wanted to see him standing next to at his inauguration.
No.
I wanted to see him standing next to, like, I don't know, like some populist renegade figure.
Yeah.
You know, there were some people that I was happy to see Harry Belafonte there. You know,
sure.
There were some people I was happy to see.
Yeah.
But
you and he go way back, don't you?
Yeah, we go way back.
That's what I thought.
Me and Harry.
Yeah.
But the Clintons were like not the right message. I didn't. That's sort of like inviting Christine Quinn to swear him in. It's sort of like, don't do that.
Right. Yeah.
So,
but I think it was also sort of like a sign that the Clintons, it's like I said to you earlier when we were having dinner, I was like, they're nothing if not extremely intelligent because like clearly they're seeing sort of, they get what's happening.
Yeah. They
if see, nothing else.
They see the writing on the wall.
Yeah, they do.
They know that the pendulum is swinging to populism.
Yes.
And they're trying to jump on board.
Yeah.
I don't think that they can successfully make that change.
I don't either. It's laughable.
Yeah. But I would laugh if I could right now.
I know.
But I'll descend into a coffee fit.
Yeah.
It was a happy event regardless because we are finally sort of like in a new era. The slate has been wiped.
Yes.
We have the High Line and now we also don't have Bloomberg.
Right.
So everything is good.
Yeah.
As is usually the case on December 24th, a number of crazy announcements were made.
Right.
That's the best day of the year to bury a story.
It's the best day. It's sort of like, you know, it's the thing that you, it's the same principle as sort of like releasing a news story sort of like Friday evening or whatever.
It's like it's the world's Friday evening.
It is, yes.
It's like the year's Friday evening.
Right, when you don't want anybody to know anything, that's when you tell them.
Exactly, because if you release a story on Christmas Eve and people want to find out about it, then they'll talk. That's the first story of the year. They'll just talk, you know, like, you can try to bury a story on New Year's Eve, but, like, if it's interesting enough, it'll become the defining story of January.
Right.
Christmas, though, starts a whole week of nobody working, and no one is reading the news, no one's paying attention to anything.
Opening
everyone's
presents,
at
they're
home
seeing cheesy
in Nebraska,
movies.
They're watching Miracle on 34th Street.
Right.
Like, no one is doing anything on the 24th. So you release a story on the 24th, and it's like, it dies for a week, and then no one finds out about it.
Right. So we're going to tell you about a few that you may not have even heard of.
Exactly.
Because I actually didn't hear about, I did hear about one of them, but I didn't hear about the first one.
So one of the things that happened on December 24th that I actually knew about because I got the email, because I'm on his email list, is Bill de Blasio's daughter, Kiara, has a past struggle with addiction.
Right.
And they released this video about it, which seemed like, you know, a thing, it was like a supportive thing where they talk about how they sort of understand what families are going through, but they did it on Christmas Eve.
Right.
So, like, it looked a lot like they were just trying to sneak that one.
It seems more suspect.
Yeah, it was like they were trying to get out ahead of that story before anyone found out about it, and then they could stop talking about it. And I mean, it was, I think, sort of like a nice idea because, you know, there was a wrong way for everyone for this story to break. And a right way for this story to break. And I think they tried to do the right thing
this is the type of story that you want to release yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, they wanted to protect Kiara herself because they've gone through great pains to, like, not tell us where she's in college and all of these things. And everyone already knows these things because everyone's so curious and she's kind of like an interesting figure.
Right.
But I think they wanted to sort of define the story themselves. But the December 24th announcement is always a real smooth.
Yeah.
The same day that that was announced, Elliot Spitzer and his wife announced that they were splitting up.
Yeah.
That was the more salacious.
Yeah, that's the one I'd heard.
Story. They had not been living together and had not really been together in years.
I mean,
I'm not surprised to hear this.
Who can blame her?
No.
I mean,
whatever.
I love Elliot Spitzer for the reasons that people love Elliot Spitzer.
Exactly.
But I don't want to be married to him.
No, exactly. And I would protect anyone's right to divorce him if it came down to it. Yes. As much as I want him to be the world's attorney general,
I know.
I also just, like, don't mind if people are divorcing him.
No.
That's fine with me.
No, he should be a single man.
Yeah. He should be a single man who's free to sleep with prostitutes if the fancy strikes him.
Sure.
I'm not bothered by that. I don't
care.
Me
either.
He can do whatever he wants.
That's right.
As long as he's devoted to keeping Wall Street in check, which is what I trust that he will be doing when he's in office.
Yeah.
But in any case, that was another December 24th announcement.
Yeah.
They have been married since 1987, so I guess this was not a light decision.
No.
And she stayed with him after the scandal.
Yeah.
Sort of technically. I don't know if they were, like, together.
Yeah.
But she's sort of a corporate lawyer in her own
right, and
she's
didn't campaign for him. They haven't been living together. So it's sort of, it's basically just a formality at this point.
Exactly.
But, like,
but the kind of formality that you
announce on Christmas Eve.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, and then as far as things starting, now that we're in a new year.
Yeah, it's 2014,
things are happening.
People. Yeah.
Janet Yellen was confirmed. We
now
have a female running the Fed for the first time in history. Mm-hmm. We don't know what that means in particular.
No.
Like, she seems like she's just going to be the same as Bernanke, like, as far as policy
Hopefully
goes.
She doesn't spend all of our money on shoes and online shopping and stuff. You can't. Not
no,
with money.
Not
God.
No. That would be the worst. And then also we have some terrifying potential news.
Oh, my God.
Which is that they recently announced that Max Baucus is going to be the ambassador to China, pending his approval.
He was going to retire at the end of his term, which was coming up,
I think
in 2016, right? Yeah. And so, this sort of starts a domino effect in the Senate.
We don't care about this in particular.
No, I mean, I do like the fact that Max Baucus is no longer going to be in the Senate.
Correct.
His seat
Good
is
news.
Probably going to go to a Republican. I don't really care.
That's an honest way to go.
Because Max Baucus was just a Democrat who was gumming up the system.
Exactly.
So, goodbye.
The
go
seat
to China.
Will now rightfully go to the Republican Party where it has been sort of effectively this entire time.
Be
gone. A Republican.
Be away from us. So that the next person in line to take his seat as
the head
of the Finance Committee is Ron Wyden.
Right.
Who is the current chairman of the Energy and Natural Resources Committee.
And now he's overburdened.
Right. So the person who will take his job on the Energy Committee is, wait for it, Mary Landrieu. The one person
who should
on
not
earth you do not want managing or being the chairperson of the energy committee.
Why? Because she's from Louisiana, where the entire fucking state is employed by oil and gas.
It's like Dick Cheney running the Energy Committee.
Yeah, exactly. Truthfully, literally.
She is that person
she's
on energy.
Dick Cheney of
she
energy.
She is in favor of the Keystone Pipeline. She wants offshore drilling everywhere. I mean,
she would, because her entire campaign has been paid for by the oil and gas industry.
Right, exactly.
That's who runs her state.
You can't blame her necessarily.
Right.
She's wrong, but you can't.
She's wrong. You can't get elected in Louisiana if you're not in the pocket of oil and gas. Fine. That's not who you want to run the Energy and Natural Resources Committee, because that is the incorrect use of energy and natural resources. So that's a problem.
Right. And this is the way that she has continued to be elected, because it's sort of odd that a three-term senator is a Democrat from Louisiana on some level. I mean,
she
keeps getting elected by being sort of completely nutty on energy.
It definitely is going to change the dynamic of her own elections, because she's sort of like a nobody in the Senate in certain ways, and she's been sort of vulnerable to a Republican challenger for a long time, and so the visibility might be good for her.
Yeah,
it won't be good for America.
I know. I think that this could lead to some interesting goings-ons,
For sure, because I mean, remember, she's in a Democratic-controlled chamber, so, like, she's not just, like...
She's not guaranteed to just, like, waltz into there.
No,
she may be the next in line, but if everybody raises a big stink...
Yeah.
But also, you sort of do, on some level, want her to get reelected.
Right.
I mean, so it's sort of... It's a little bit of a hairy situation. I certainly don't want her running the energy campaign. I would...
I think that even if she does run that committee, that they will probably be watching her like a hawk.
Yeah, I mean, there's only so many things that she can do as the chairperson. I mean, she can sort of...
But she sort of sets the agenda for what the Democrats
can
put on
the floor.
She can
push things along. She can...
hold things up.
And she can have hearings whenever she wants. I mean, she's the type of person who does things like that. I mean, she can't just go passing legislation willy-nilly.
But she can hold up legislation that's important and choose to put forward legislation that she knows
that is awful.
Will get the Max Baucuses and the Republicans and is awful.
Right.
And will definitely pass the House, because they'll pass any crazy nonsense.
Yeah.
Except for things that are good.
Correct.
They'll pass any crazy nonsense.
Right.
It has to be both crazy and nonsense.
Yeah.
Here's a story that has nothing to do with anything. Stamp prices are increasing. We've just stuck that in.
Yeah.
That has nothing to do with anything.
Didn't they just go up, too?
Well, they must have, because Brent and I both thought that stamps were 44 cents. Apparently, they're 46.
Right.
Who knew?
Right. But what are those things? Okay, so here's the... Can't you buy, like, single stamps that are apparently, like, 46 cents or something? But then there's also those
forever
stamps that are, like, mysteriously cheaper. But, like, how do you get... Why would you pay 46 cents for...
The cost of whatever stamps are, but they will stay that price forever.
So you can
use them to send a letter forever.
But I thought they were 44 cents.
They used to be back when stamps cost 44. Probably the last time you bought stamps. The last time I bought stamps, they were 44 cents.
You don't mail your rent checks?
No. Oh, no. I sometimes mail my rent checks. When I'm in the mood.
We don't have to anymore. I haven't put anything in the mail forever.
I literally used my last stamp today.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that annoying?
Yeah.
Because now rents... Oh, no, it's taking effect January 26th.
Oh, you're fine.
I got to go buy
a bunch
stamps
of stamps
immediately.
Save yourself cents.
But so the deal is, if you want cool stamps, then you buy the kind of stamps that have like a number on them, and then you end up having to buy those 1 cent stamps to like add money to the stamps nonsense. Forever stamps just are the... like a letter costs one forever stamp.
Right. Okay.
That's the difference.
Isn't that sort of a new thing, the forever stamp? Like, wasn't that invented recently?
Invented in the 44 cent stamp era, I think.
Got it. Okay.
Remember when weren't letters like 34 cents at one point?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm sure older listeners, of which we have none, can remember 5 cent stamps and things like that.
Yeah.
But I remember stamp letters costing something in the 30s.
Yeah.
And then they're basically doing what they always do with subway fares, where they're pretending it's a temporary thing to like recoup losses because they're having a hard year or whatever.
Of course. Yeah.
Those prices never go back down.
No.
The subway,
I mean, they're going to reduce the cost of a stamp.
That's not a thing.
No.
That's not a thing. And then people who bought the forever stamps at 48 cents are going to be pissed because they could have gotten, you know. It doesn't work that way.
No.
that's like the MTA in New York is always raising fares. Like, at a time when you're like, why would you need to raise... Like, you just raised fares. Like, why would you raise them again?
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, it's because we're losing money. Then it turns out that they were cooking the books. Always. This happens every single time. Then they're like, well, it's just a temporary stopgap.
Right.
But then the fare increase never goes away. And then the next year, they raise them again because of, quote, another crisis isn't real.
It's the same with anything that that people are supposedly only going to do until they get things straightened
out.
There's
no such thing as a temporary price increase.
No.
Sorry. There's such thing as inflation. Sure. There's no such thing as a temporary price increase. No. So sorry, stamps.
No.
With that said, the Postal Service is important, and it's falling apart. But we should remind you that it's self-funded. We don't pay for the Postal Service. I mean, we pay for mailing letters and things. But it's not like taxes or just like paying for the Postal Service.
Right.
So all those pension arguments that they're always making are bullshit. The Postal Service is like paying us, basically. Anyway, side issue. We'll talk about it one day. On to more exciting things.
Yes.
Hillary Pillory.
Yeah.
It's here.
Back to it. Ta-da!
Well, the year started off with a bang for Hillary.
Yes.
Because Politico has already published an article all about her potential candidacy.
Right. Which is happening.
Happening.
As all people know.
Right.
But it had a huge story, actually, just today or yesterday when you're listening to this. But about her shadow campaign. Yes. It makes it sound like real sort of seedy and sketchy. Yeah, exactly.
Mafia-esque.
Totally. Yeah. Well, point mafia.
Yeah, it would be.
Yeah. But apparently, she's sort of already got her minions out, you know, running a campaign, looking into campaign issues for her, and it sort of has been going on for a while, and we'll tell you some of the details about it. But It begins last summer, where she has sort of like her first meeting with sort of like anyone other than her, like, outside.
All of her aides that have been charged with, gathering information about a potential run.
Right.
So they present what they call dispassionate numbers.
It doesn't surprise me that they present a dispassionate presentation to her.
No, of course not. It's all pretty cut and dry over there.
Right.
It's all
to get excited about?
Yeah, exactly. It's all pretty lacking in passion.
Everybody's done this once before. It didn't go so well.
Everyone's being real careful.
They all probably rolled their eyes before they went into this meeting to have to sort of like present this. But anyway, so they go and they tell her all about field operations. They tell her how things are different now than they were than in 2008,
like how much
because
money
she's an old
need.
Person, so she needs to be told, you know, it's like teaching your grandmother how to work a computer, basically.
Exactly.
She has to sort of, you know, she needs to be told
how to talk to people these days.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, polling and how much money she's going to need to, whatever.
It's apparently a, quote, nearly hour-long gathering, which I was like, it only, like, for 50 minutes they all got together and talked about it, and then that was it. They were just like, well, now we know. Nothing. We know nothing.
Nothing.
She didn't make any decisions, and no one knows what anyone thinks.
She's claimed that she's not going to make a decision until this year, in 2014. But as Politico put it, there has been a quiet, intensifying, improvisational effort to lay the groundwork for another White House bid.
Now, we have talked about this before.
Yeah.
Because last year, we talked a little bit about the Hillary Clinton super PACs that were starting to emerge.
Which, Ready for Hillary is like a real just sort of, I mean, it's a...
We've been complaining about Ready for Hillary for a while. When we introduced Ready for Hillary to you, it was like one random woman who was like sleeping in her car and like running around fundraising for suspect reasons with, you know, as a full-time job.
Right. And she worked for Hillary like in 2008, but as a bundler who like got like, you know, 10 people to give her $20 basically.
Exactly.
I mean, like she's sort of like, she's a fake person.
Real seriously.
Yeah.
Exactly. Ready for Hillary now is...
BFD.
It's the major organizing force that campaign,
yeah.
as far as you would know. As far as a person outside of the Hillary circle
If you're
would
on
know.
Facebook, you know.
Yeah, exactly. If you're on Facebook...
You can't get them to leave you the
hell
alone.
Why, after all of this time, do they think that you and me are the ideal people to target with this information?
We're not.
We're not the right people. we're doing nothing to further their cause except actively working against it.
We couldn't be less ready for Hillary.
We are so unready for Hillary that it's not even funny. And we've been pretty clear about that.
Yeah.
If two people have ever been less ready for Hillary, I would like them to present themselves now. in any case, there are apparently now warring super PACs emerging.
Yes.
Because there's Ready for Hillary, which has sort of been the early leader. But Priorities USA, which was
Obama's
super PAC, has suddenly stepped into the ring, which annoys me because I'm sort of like...
It annoys me too.
Don't suddenly be like, oh, well, this is where the wind is blowing, so we don't care about things.
Right.
We
but it got to the point where, like, basically, like, Clinton and her sort of, like, close, you know, Clintonites had to get involved because the
Huma
two
Abedin had to get involved.
Right.
Poor Huma Abedin, who's has to be married to Anthony Weiner this whole time. Yes. Like, suddenly has to be, like, making, ferrying phone calls and
The whole Clinton world had to have a meeting amongst themselves to try and figure out...
a campaign that hasn't been declared yet.
Right, to try and... I mean, this is just sort of like... It's too perfect because...
Yeah.
I mean, her 2008 campaign, lest we remind you, was not sort of a wild success. Besides the fact that she lost, right. Which, you know, would lead you to know that it wasn't a success.
Right.
Even had she squeaked out the win, was still not a success.
It was just... A mess.
It was a giant disaster.
And... Already, as we're getting ready for Hillary, we're seeing the exact same pattern emerge.
Right,
and of, like, random warring factions that no one has any control over, and, like, random people being charged with, like, helping other random people decide what, the, you know, what their responsibilities are, and, like, no one's really in charge. And no one's even declared anything yet.
No, but that's part of the problem. And it's also part of the problem with super PACs, because even when you are running a campaign, you're technically not supposed to be able to sort of, like, be talking to the super PACs. Now, I think everybody... would sort of, you know, assume that that's not actually what happens. But, I mean, you know, when you just sort of, when you aren't running a campaign and you're sort of, like, are not declaring anything and you have super PACs out there, it's sort of a scary thing to have going on because you're not sort of, like, in charge of messaging. You're not sort of, like, able to coordinate the two amongst each other. And so, finally, sort of, like, some of her people had to get involved. Like we said, Huma Abedin and some of her other people. And basically,
they had to call a meeting
and they had to sort out...
For a campaign
out,
that hasn't started yet between two supposedly independent entities who are vying for control of a thing that isn't existing yet. Like, oh my God.
It's not what you want.
No. Already, she's proving to have the craziest supporters.
I know.
Like, if there's anything that we both learned from reading the last Game Change, it's that Hillary Clinton's campaign was a collection of mismatched people where no one was in charge.
Right.
She wasn't really good at being in charge of the sort of, like, general, you know, consensus.
Yeah.
You know, they had sort of, like, warring factions within her campaign.
Right. Well, and the people who were in charge of that were terrible at it.
And the people who were in charge were terrible. And she has these weird loyalties to people who can't get shit together. That's a problem that she's historically had. Because there's all this jockeying to, like, be close to her that happens in the Clinton universe. Like, everyone is always vying for some control. And that... The control is really just, like, closeness to the Clintons.
Yeah.
And so random people end up in weird positions in Clintonverse because they're just sort of, like, so much interest in being in their sphere.
Yeah.
And so not only... I mean, I would guess that Huma Abedin is a pretty competent operator over there.
Probably.
Just because I kind of like her.
Yeah.
But if already she's having to have her own staff intervene as two separate entities... like, vie for control of her message.
Right.
Then we're off to the wrong start.
Right.
And this is all because they're competing over fundraising opportunities.
I know.
They're competing to do fundraising for her.
Yeah.
So basically they ended up deciding that Ready for Hillary was going to focus on getting out the vote and donations of under $25,000.
Right.
And priorities is going to focus on, like, big donations.
Right. Well, and the funny thing is that sort of, like, there were a lot of people who sort of, like, their first instinct was to just sort of, like, disband Ready for Hillary. Because everybody sort of felt like priorities was going to be,
better,
like, was
going to
be
sure.
better
well,
organized.
Ready for Hillary wasn't exactly a smashing success
exactly.
the last time around.
And so they ultimately decided that that would probably cause some negative press to just sort of, like, shut down, like, this, you know, super PAC that has sort of, like, been... out there for her for a long time. And so there were other people who sort of wanted to combine the two, and that didn't seem great. So they finally, you know, made this delineation. But the funny thing is that also in this article, because the Ready for Hillary people are sort of, like, combining all of the email lists, and we're going to talk about that in our next story, but, like, they have said that, like, they will share that with the campaign when it sort of, like, actually gets off the ground.
Yeah.
But, like, everybody seems to think they're not going to want it because they're going to do their own voter list. They're probably going to try and get Obama's voter list. They don't care about some email addresses that freaking Ready for Hillary got off of Facebook or wherever the hell they got it from. I mean, like...
Especially as Ready for Hillary does not seem to have the greatest targeting. If Brent and I are speaking from any experience.
So anyway, it continues to be a bunch of
chaos.
It's chaos.
It's chaos over there already. There's no campaign yet, and it's chaos. Like, and this, I know that this is not Clinton's actual people running the
show. No, and
it's
not her actual fault either, but it just sort of, like, proves...
But this is what happens in Hillary Clinton universe that ends up destroying her campaign.
Yeah, it's a continuation of what happened.
It's a continuation. Like, she is out there trying to prove to us that she learned her lessons. That's what her message has been
right.
this whole time. They've been very consistent on her own staff about how... you know, the Clinton campaign learned its lesson in 2008 right. and would not make the same mistakes. Except that it seems like the mistakes are not about, it's not about making the mistakes. It's about having the mistakes happen.
Right.
And the mistakes are already happening.
Right.
Without them. It doesn't, they don't even need to make the mistakes. They're happening because other people are making them.
Right.
Meanwhile, there's like this whole email list renting.
Yeah, what is that? So weird, right?
That's a thing that's happening, though.
It's bizarre. It's like
organizations are renting each other's email lists a lot. That is why if you sign up for Move On emails, you suddenly end up on like progressives.org email lists and like Mark Warner's email list
yeah.
and like what's
Oh, it's true. I know.
Who was that? It was like a Florida congressman that we were all know. On his fucking
well, I'm
email
still,
list.
I'm still getting Rob Zurbin's
Rob
email.
Rob Zurbin!
Who ran what? Against John Boehner, I think, yeah. in Ohio.
Like, Rob
I get
Zurbin,
an email from him every other day.
He didn't even fucking win his election. No. Why is he still fundraising for me? I don't live in his state. I don't care about him.
Leave me alone, Rob Zurbin.
I don't even know who he is.
Yeah, I know.
He's got a very memorable name.
He does.
Possibly because he's emailed me so many times.
Well, right, exactly. Well,
but
Zurbin.
Zurbin. That's
a
weird name.
That's a weird name. Yeah.
But it's a Z name. Z names always are memorable because they have Z in them. But anyway, he's renting email lists. Just like
ready for Hillary. Hillary. Because they rented her email list from 2008 when she was running for president.
Yeah.
Because they basically sent out an email to supporters on Sunday. And actually, this email came from General Wesley Clark, too.
Yeah.
In fact, the link to this story on the Drudge Report was Hillary Clinton announces campaign ?
Really?
Like, because basically they were like, obviously the campaign let Ready for Hillary have access to this list. Wesley Clark, who once ran for president and who was close to the, you know, Clinton-verse,
family, yeah.
sent this email. I mean, it is a fairly sort of like, it's the most sort of like, you know,
overt action.
Yeah, exactly. That it seems like that world has taken here. And basically they were, you know, asking for money, basically, for
in exchange for a free bumper sticker. But here's the thing. They're asking for money to, because she needs our support as she decides whether or not to run. Does that cost something to decide whether
no.
or not you're running?
It costs a damn dime.
It's free.
It's free. Yeah. But also,
that's one type of campaigning I'm not willing to
I know. Give you
to.
Money for. Yeah. No. Uh-uh. Even if it was a candidate that I liked.
No. If you haven't decided whether or not to run, you can't have my money yet.
If Elizabeth Warren emails me tomorrow and asks me for money
because
so she can decide to run for president, I'm not giving it to
no,
her.
No, no. When she
as much
declares,
as I desperately want her
I
to run
I will donate my life savings to her campaign.
Right, exactly.
But if she's just thinking about it, she doesn't need money for that.
No.
What does she need money for? Email is free.
Yeah, exactly. So is thinking.
Thinking is free, too.
Yeah.
More than email.
Yeah. But the Ready for Hillary people, they were, like, meeting with big shots in New Hampshire this last weekend. They're going to Iowa soon. So,
they really worry me.
It's happening. I mean,
those people worry me.
For the people who are out there thinking that maybe she just won't run.
That's not a thing. She may have a very short-lived campaign, I think, because that is what running as an inevitable candidate will get you. And I think she's probably aware of that. That one of the things that article from Politico also talked about was Chelsea's position in all of this. Because Chelsea has sort of, like, held off on saying whether or not she thinks this is a good idea. Because she's sort of trying to let her mother, like, decide whether it's, like, a healthy idea to run.
Yeah.
But she would be sort of a new addition to the campaign this time around, because she would have a lot more influence. And that worries me, because she might have a better sense of how to, like, talk to young people.
She might.
But it also makes me think that maybe there's somebody there, aside from all of these, like, blood-sucking, you know, careerists who, like, maybe is interested in whether or not Hillary Clinton is, like, a functioning person at the end of the day, and, like, might encourage her not to run if it really is, like, going to be too exhausting.
Right.
Because this is already, I'm exhausted already for her.
I know.
It's, like, real tiring to deal with this.
And as a person, I don't wish ill for her.
No, I would like her to have a happy retirement where she can go and probably has many mansions to visit or something.
Yeah, of course.
She's a very nice person.
Yes.
I also feel like I have this general impression of Ready for Hillary as still being run by this one crazy renegade woman. And so in my mind, I just can't trust anything they're up to.
I know. It's like, suspect.
If I were Hillary, I would not want them to go meet in New Hampshire and Iowa with anyone.
No.
I would be like, you know what? Let me decide.
I know.
And then I will meet with those people.
I know.
You guys just get into your cars and where you're living or whatever.
They don't seem like trustworthy presenters.
No. They seem like the worst people on earth. Trying to force a poor old lady into an election and no one wants to elect her. That's just mean. In any case.
Sorry.
Other exciting Dynasty news.
Yes.
Liz Cheney is out of the race in Wyoming.
Oh my gosh.
Finally just realized that not a single person in Wyoming wanted her to be elected to that seat.
The opening sentence from the story from the New York Times is, Liz Cheney's short-lived Wyoming Senate campaign shows the perils of personal ambition outpacing a rationale for candidacy, which is boy, that is just like a smackdown. But like, when you sort of like get into the, because I hadn't really studied this race a ton, to be perfectly honest, other than the fact that I knew that she was running and it wasn't going super well. But like, it really does seem like she was only running just because she felt like she could, because she was Liz Cheney.
Exactly. No, first of all, she doesn't live in Wyoming.
No, she
that's
was
the first thing.
She lives in Virginia.
And I know that Dick Cheney was sort of like vaguely running as if he lived in Wyoming.
Right.
But even he didn't live in Wyoming.
No.
And once you're running on like a sort of dynasty style Wyoming connection.
Right.
Like, at that point, you're not qualified. That's more annoying than Hillary Clinton just coming out of the blue and repping New York for Senate, even though she was just not even from there in a little bit.
Right.
Because this is just sort of like not, her connection is like so far removed that she, but she doesn't have to explain it because she's pretending she just is from Wyoming.
Yeah.
Hillary Clinton had to explain what she was doing carpetbagging.
Right.
Like, Liz Cheney was just walking around like she owned the fucking place.
Yeah. And the main problem wasn't the fact that she lived in Virginia, because I think that probably could have been overlooked.
Could have been overlooked.
But the problem was is that
she's running against a well-liked candidate.
Right, she's running in a primary against Mike Enzi, who is, like, really well-liked. He's sort of, like, he has no reason to be primaried.
No.
He sort of is, you know, he's loved in the state. He goes home every weekend. He sort of is known for having these ice cream socials with people. He's also known for taking copious notes at town hall meetings, where he sort of is very, like, really make sure that everyone who wants to speak gets the time. I mean, he sort of is like, he's
people
loved.
Like him there. Yeah.
People, there's no reason to be running in a primary against him. It just didn't sort of make any sense.
All of her issues were foreign policy issues, where she was like weirdly like, hawkish, which like, people in Wyoming don't live near a border.
No, and they also just sort of just the general trend in the Republican Party is just sort of like a little more isolationist. Not entirely isolationist, but they're not sort of,
Bush-style interventionist.
Exactly, or her father-style interventionist.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's just sort of like, those were her only sort of like, you know, vague qualifications, and they just sort of like, they didn't make sense in Wyoming because nobody agrees with her there, and they also just sort of like, nobody really ultimately, in the scope of what people care about right now, I mean, I realize you sort of like have to care generally about foreign policy, but it's not a campaign issue to run in a Republican primary.
Now we're talking about how the economy and income inequality is going to be the defining issue of 2014.
It's not a thing. Nobody cares that Liz Cheney wants to bomb Iran.
No.
I don't know that she does. I just made that up. She probably does.
That's got to be it, right? What else is there these days?
I mean,
that's what you do.
It's like not a, like, what? That's not a,
and
it's not a campaign.
People in Wyoming are not electing a senator.
Right.
Because of that issue.
Right. And also, like, I think that she just didn't really necessarily come across very likable, because
she came across as a mean person.
Right, because even though the other thing that happened in this race that most people sort of know about, the only thing that happened was that while most people in Wyoming, I imagine, probably agree with her on her sort of, like, anti-gay rights stance, it also, she really just seemed like a terrible human and family member. She has a gay sister. Like, even most,
and she was like openly insensitive about that.
Right, and it was sort of like a public spat because her dad, even as horrible as he is, has sort of like been on the side of gay rights because he has a gay daughter.
Well, if there's one thing Republicans have historically done, it's change their tune when a gay member of their family appears.
Yeah, Rob Portman did it recently.
Didn't like gays till his son was gay, and then he was like, oh, my son is still human. I guess gays are okay.
But not
like,
Liz Cheney.
Liz Cheney, she's can't be stopped.
Subhuman.
I mean, have a guess about that, which is that I would imagine that her and her sister have a little bit of rivalry.
Yeah, they don't
going
like
on.
Each other.
They don't like each other.
Not based on something other than her being a lesbian. Yeah, exactly.
That's just the thing that Liz knows she can sort of like pick it.
Yeah.
You know, pick apart the deal.
And it just didn't go so great publicly.
Didn't go so great publicly because people were like, don't be so mean to your sister.
Right, exactly.
Even if your sister is gay.
Yeah.
She's still your sister.
Yeah.
Like, people in Wyoming
value family.
They value family.
I guess.
They may not know much about gays.
Right.
But they probably don't want you to be like, publicly feuding with your sister.
They don't want you to hate your sister just because she's gay.
No, that's mean.
Yeah. There's a siren going by, everyone.
An emergency is happening.
Yeah, right outside our sound studio.
You might... It's making me cough.
And also, it just sort of turned people off that sort of, like, she was just running on the Cheney name. Yeah. Because it's like, who really cares? She doesn't have any other
qualifications.
No.
It's like, what?
I mean, I think she's worked in administrations, but like not no, in a sense, I mean, that like to be running to for be, the Senate is just sort of
Wyoming,
like
Wyoming. Like, no, she didn't have any particular connection to that would no, make her qualify exactly. for that seat.
So she pulled out. It was fairly inevitable.
It was going to be an embarrassment.
Yeah.
So she dodged a bullet. It was an embarrassment even for anyway. As long as it lasts.
Yeah, exactly.
Hopefully we can stop hearing from the Cheneys soon.
Oh,
so
God.
Sick of them.
I know, right?
And maybe we can start hearing more about how Clay Aiken is thinking of running for Congress.
This is genius. I love this.
And this was reported in a very serious manner.
Yeah, this is no laughing matter, people.
No, I mean, it's very much a laughing matter.
Right, it is.
But Clay Aiken is from North Carolina.
Right, he's from Raleigh. He wants to run for North Carolina's 2nd Congressional District, which represents Raleigh, where he's from. And he's actually sort of taking it seriously.
Quite seriously. Yeah, he's met with a bunch of advisors.
Right.
There was another Democrat that's like expected to run. This is a Republican held seat.
Right.
But it was a Democratic held seat before. There was the 2010 Republican surge kind of, you know, flipped the seat back to being a Republican seat.
But Democrats
but
sort of
this is
are
considered
eyeing
a potential
this.
Pickup.
Right, exactly.
For Democrats. But he's started like consulting with people in Washington. He started consulting with some consultants in Raleigh.
Right. He's been working with this woman named Betsy Conte, who was like a political strategist who worked for the former North Carolina governor and also worked for Al Gore.
Yeah.
And he's sort of is
talking
really,
to pollsters.
Yeah.
Like.
He's doing it.
Yeah. He's doing it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I feel like. This just
I
seems
mean,
like,
I don't know.
I can't know whether or not I trust him. Because I literally have no sense of politically.
Right.
Like, I have a sense that he's, like, come out and probably is, like, sort of not an evil, horrible person.
Right. Because
he had that experience of, like, being a person who had to come out of the closet.
Yeah.
But, like, I also don't know that I trust that he's going to be making great, like, choices and foreign policy.
He's not making great choices in music
fashion.
Or his hair.
Yeah,
or,
I mean, there's a lot of questionable choices going on there.
Yes.
But like, I literally have no sense of like, as some, what he would be as a person who like represents a district on issues of international import or national import.
No, me either.
Aside from the fact that he's a singer who is gay.
Right.
I literally know nothing about it. And then he won a competition show.
He didn't. He got second
came
place.
In second place.
He lost to Ruben Studdard.
You're right. That he came in second place in a competition
who
show.
Who was also on... What was Ruben Studdard on this year? He was on The Biggest Loser this year.
Oh, God.
So that season of American Idol is really making a comeback.
This is like if Kelly Clarkson decided to run for office.
Well,
not
we
even
already,
she's a libertarian.
We already know about...
She's accidentally a libertarian.
Right.
Or like if... I don't even know who else wins American Idol. That's how little I know. But this is like if somebody ran... This is literally somebody random who has no political sort of background. Because his only political background is maybe as an advocate for gay rights.
Which he has been doing. Yes.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's a great thing to do as a public figure.
Doesn't he have a kid, too?
He does have a kid.
He has a kid, right?
Yeah, apparently.
With a wife? Was he married? With a...
No. I think he adopted a kid or something with a partner or something. Oof. No, he didn't.
I don't know. I have no idea. I was making that face because I briefly had the thought of him having sex with a woman.
With anyone, really. It's well, disturbing. But
the woman part was what
was
really threw
really,
me, but yeah.
Yeah. Really. It's in Raleigh. People just maybe don't know. But I feel like I... You know, we have in the past advocated celebrities running for offices to sort of raise awareness. We talked about Mitch McConnell's seat going to what's-her-face.
Oh, yeah, Ashley Judd.
Ashley Judd.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were sort of vaguely in favor of that because we like Ashley Judd.
Right.
But I also sort of feel like in a low-profile seat like this that is... I mean, she was running for a Senate seat in that potential campaign.
Right.
And it was going to be a seat where her celebrity and her experience with Democratic politics... was going to potentially change the fate of, you know, this major seat. This might change the fate of a seat.
Right.
But, like, he's not ever going to be properly vetted because this is such an unimportant race.
I know, exactly.
So, like,
that's true.
Now it's just, like, a random guy running for office who only has name recognition because of American Idol.
But if he's a random Democrat, who could win in a race that he's doesn't have to be fully vetted in, then...
Maybe it's fine.
Maybe that's what we want.
Maybe
he's the perfect candidate for this race.
That's true. Who knows?
Speaking of celebrities getting elected things, California's border state, who has a long history of electing celebrities as governor, Arizona, is trying to get into the celeb governor game here, basically, because Steven Seagal is thinking about running for governor there.
First of all, Steven Seagal is everywhere and nowhere at once.
Well, yeah.
He's got a lot of fake TV shows going on where he's a cop and...
Well, yeah, he was talking about this, you know, harebrained idea to run for governor while he's promoting his new show on Reels Channel. That's Reels with a Z, people,
that's a fake
by the way.
Word, by the way, and a fake channel.
And it's called Steven Seagal, Lawman, Maricopa County.
Yeah.
Now, you may recognize Maricopa County right. as the place where Crazy Pants Sheriff Joe Arpaio runs the show.
Right.
He's working with Joe Arpaio on the show.
Like, don't be doing that.
And he's one of Joe Arpaio's posse, who is like one of the unpaid people who...
They're like a fucking lynch mob.
Yeah, they're like a lynch mob sort of
looking
militia.
For brown people.
Looking for brown people in Arizona at the border. Yeah.
That's a TV show that Steven Seagal is going to parlay into a run for governor.
And that's what he would be running on, is border security.
But also, apparently he's been deputized by sheriff's offices in 3 states.
Yeah.
Like, first of all.
Border states. Well, wait, no. Louisiana.
Louisiana. Not a border state.
It has a border with the Gulf of Mexico, which has the word Mexico in it.
That's right. It has a border with water. It has a border with drowning.
Mexican water. We do not want that Mexican
that
water getting into our...
Well, it had a border with French people at one time.
That's true, it did. Which is almost worse.
You can't trust them. Exactly. But like, what... Where is Steven Seagal from? Where does he live?
Doesn't matter.
Where... Like, can you be the governor of New Mexico if you're just some guy who, like, is working with Sheriff Arpaio?
Or Arizona. Yeah,
or Arizona? Yeah. If you're working with Sheriff Arpaio on...
Yeah, sure.
I mean, you shouldn't be.
Right. Is he a resident of Arizona?
Right.
Is that where he votes?
I would guess no.
I would think probably
because
not.
Because I was under the impression he was a resident of Louisiana because he had that other show. Didn't he have a show about being a cop in Louisiana, or was that somebody else?
I don't know.
I think he did. I think he's been up to these shenanigans before.
Yeah.
He's just sort of like a roving cop. It's like a roving movie star cop. It's like walking around, like fighting crime in various border states and not liking brown people.
That's it.
That's
what he does. His only qualifications.
Exactly. And probably starring in Expendables movies on the side.
Oh, perhaps.
I bet he's in the Expendables. I wouldn't know for sure, but I once saw one of those movies.
You did?
Yeah, isn't that weird?
It's so weird.
Yeah, I saw an early cut of one.
Oh.
It wasn't so scary because they had not yet added all the special effects.
Oh, okay.
And so every time...
It was probably weird.
Yeah, it was weird. It was not very good.
It wasn't very good with the special effects.
I would imagine
probably.
Not. But it also included a lot of like people like pointing nervously at empty space and like pointing at big white blobs that were going to become helicopters and things like that.
Like that. Uh-huh.
So it kind of took down the tension factor for me because I was like, oh, this is fake. I learned some things about special effects though in that movie.
Oh yeah.
Like there were all these scenes where there were like helicopters that were not part of the original filming. And I was kind of like, is it that hard to film with a helicopter? Like it's really easier to add a like
real helicopter,
a fake helicopter. Yeah. Like is that really easier? But I guess it is.
Apparently.
Must be. It's easier for computer people. And in final news.
Oh, this is
final
a good one.
Election news and final news.
More governor's news.
Yeah. If you were wondering whatever happened to Mark Coon Rippy Brown, the owner of pet raccoon Rebecca, who had this viral video on YouTube where he was like showering with his raccoon.
Yeah, I don't remember. Apparently this became like a viral sensation.
Yeah, I remember it.
Oh, you do? I don't remember it at all. I have a lot of questions about this, which are sort of irrelevant to the story, but
it may not surprise you to find that this was happening in Tennessee, by the way.
It couldn't surprise you.
No, nothing.
You should not be, if you're surprised, stop listening now.
There are only a few states where that could have been happening.
Correct.
Tennessee.
One of them.
It's right there on the top of the list.
But apparently, so there was this video of him showering with his pet raccoon, Rebecca. That's another question I have. Rebecca?
Yeah, well, it's biblical, you know?
I guess. Yeah, that's it. So, but anyway, after this went viral, like, wildlife officials came and confiscated the raccoon from him. And he's been trying to get...
This is a man who was showering with his raccoon. He was obviously very attached to the raccoon.
Clearly. That's a very... If he wasn't in the picture, it would be a very cute picture.
Yeah.
The raccoon... I don't like raccoons.
No.
They were living in my walls in my old apartment.
Oh my god, Brent was being hunted by raccoons.
I was. Caught one.
Ray Ray was being actually hunted by raccoons because there were raccoons that were bigger than her living in her walls.
Yeah, it was an unfortunate situation.
There are raccoons
to say the
in
least.
LA that are like people sized.
Yeah.
Remember the time that I, in my old house, saw a raccoon staring at me from a tree and it looked like a person because it had that little bandit mask
and it was
human sized.
Yeah.
And I heard a noise in a tree and I was like, oh my god, I'm being
robbed. Well, it sounded like
a
bear in the wall.
Yeah, And then I look over and there's like a human-sized head staring at me with little bandit mask eyes on.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my god, I'm being robbed. This is the end. Except it was a raccoon.
Yeah. But anyway, this raccoon was quite cute.
Yeah.
Showering on his shoulder, creepily.
Looked a lot less, a lot less intimidating with all wet and...
But anyway, he feels that his best chance to get Rebecca back is to challenge incumbent governor Bill Haslam in the Republican primary in August.
Obviously. What else could he do?
He has apparently tried to get her back twice, once in a letter to the wildlife officials, and once with a petition of 60,000 signatures to the governor, which he claims went unopened.
I would guess that's not true, because that is the first kind of petition I would open as a governor. I would be like, this guy sent me.
Yeah. Exactly.
A petition with, you know, with 60,000 signatures for a raccoon.
But in Brown's own words, he says, Governor Haslam ignored the cries from the entire United States.
He's a guy who understands the value of good PR.
He's striking a populist tone.
Exactly.
To get his
raccoon. He's the kind of guy,
back.
Unlike Hillary, who knows what it takes to get elected.
That's right.
Yeah. It's a strategy. So in any case, if you have thoughts on this matter, you can contact the Tennessee governor's office, because they apparently are in charge of whether or not
people can keep their pet raccoons or not.
Like, there's too many questions for me to even answer or ask about this story.
Yeah.
I don't even know. Yeah. I do remember the video, and I was kind of disturbed by it. But also, I wondered if, you know, there are, like, places where ferrets are not legal.
Yeah.
But then I saw those pictures of the ferrets and the cats that were best friends that I flipped through for, like, 3 hours at work one day. And I was sort of like, oh, ferrets are adorable. Every animal looks adorable when it's just, like, being cuddly.
I don't know. I don't like ferrets.
They're creepy looking.
Yeah.
Hanging out with their best friend cat, though, they look very cuddly. More cuddly than I've seen.
I don't like cats either, though.
Well, cats are horrible. They're out to kill you, and that's a fact.
Yeah.
But I actually met a cat this last week.
Oh.
That I think is my favorite cat of all the cats.
Oh, so not a cat gang cat.
Not a cat gang cat. It was my friend's cat in Washington.
Uh-huh.
And he left me alone the entire time that I stayed with her.
Usually cats know that you don't like them.
I know. And they just come right up to me. And she was like, you know, normally he's very friendly. I'm sorry he's not being friendly. And I was like, no, he loves me.
Oh, he's being friendly.
He knew. He could sense that I didn't want anything to do with him because his very presence was killing me.
Cats aren't very respectful usually.
He respected it, moved on with his life.
Yeah.
Was like, I'm just going to stay out of her way.
Yeah.
That rarely happens with a cat. I almost wanted to pet him to thank him for being such a great cat.
Right, but that opens up a whole can of worms.
Then I'm sending mixed messages. That's the wrong thing to do. So in any case, there's hope for cats, maybe.
Maybe.
Or maybe not. There's just one cat.
No hope for raccoons, though.
There's no hope for raccoons.
Do you think they actually have Rebecca still? Like, are they holding Rebecca ransom? Like, wouldn't they have just let Rebecca go?
I would imagine that Rebecca is now wandering a Tennessee forest.
I was going to say, the Tennessee government is not, like, keeping her...
Holding Rebecca.
That's not happening.
Oh, my God. That is a whole nother question that maybe, as governor, he could address.
Right.
What you do with confiscated
animals. Also, could
animals.
He not just get another raccoon from anywhere and then
not.
Just not post a YouTube video of him showering with it?
This is a question that I've had, which is, like, if you know that it's not legal for you to have a raccoon, like... Don't publicize that you have it. No one would have ever found out he had the raccoon if he was just hanging out with his raccoon in a shower. like a normal pet owner.
Right. Well, you would... I'm assuming that if you're hanging out with your pet raccoon in your shower, it's better just to not know.
Yeah, exactly.
To not have people know.
Exactly.
Maybe you don't want people to know.
No. Even if Rebecca is your best friend...
It is.
And Rebecca...
Very much his
Rebecca
best friend.
Rebecca was his best friend. At least it was a clean raccoon.
That's true.
In any case, we are now back on the air.
Weekly.
Just look for us every single week.
We'll be here.
If you thought that I briefly worried during my CDS bout that we were like somehow going to drop the ball and it was going to be irreparable and we were never going to get back on track. And then I was sort of like, no, we can just start again.
We always get back on track.
Yeah. We very rarely skip a week, but when we do, we always get back on track.
Yeah.
So look for us next week.
Yep.
And we will hopefully have some exciting news for you then.
Yeah.
Hopefully not.
We're going to talk about some things that we didn't end up talking about tonight that are just sort of random things.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about the Olympics. We didn't talk about that.
Oh my God.
We've got things.
You guys know we love the Olympics.
Oh, we're getting excited.
The Olympics.
Lila's already excited about using the Olympic music that we use for the Summer Olympics,
today,
like in the podcast intro music.
And this
was
my first day back to work after the holidays. I was already asking everyone when the Olympics were going to start. And when I found out it's still a month away, I like had a near breakdown.
Yeah.
Because I'm ready. I, on my flight back, was watching some short track speed skating trials.
Right.
And I was like,
which
can this just happen now?
You don't care about any other,
no,
at any other moment.
I was saying, I still don't like team sports, regardless. Sure. But the Winter Olympics is full of non-team sports.
It is.
It is a very individual sport kind of Olympics.
Sure is.
So I'm all over the Winter Olympics.
Yeah.
I love every moment of it.
Yeah.
I love skiing. I love speed skating. I love figure skating. We know. Like, obviously.
Obvi.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, I mean, there's just nothing I don't love about it. So we're going to be blowing out. In any case, we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Hopefully I won't have a cough.
Yes.
Bye.